The chair now calls this ALA Council Executive Board Membership Information Session to order. This meeting is held in accordance with Policy A.4.2.5.2, which calls for at least one session of the ALA Council to be held with the Executive Board prior to the regular meetings of Council. Any member of the Association may participate in this information session. This is an information session only. No action may be taken here. It is ALA's policy to employ a professional parliamentarian for all of our business meetings at the conferences. So it is my pleasure to introduce Ellie Mina, ALA's parliamentarian. Also on the platform today are Courtney L. Young, ALA President-elect. Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary to Council. Joanne Kempf, Director of the Office of ALA Governance. I would also like to introduce Danielle Alderson, our projectionist, who is over there, and Lois Ann Gregory Wood, our Council Secretariat. This meeting is being captioned for the hearing impaired. Our captionist for this midwinter meeting is Heather Theriot. If you wish to take advantage of this service, please be seated where you can see the screens. You've received the agenda, ALA CD number 8, dated 1-24-14, for this session. The agenda is also available at the Council Document Pickup Station at the rear of this room. I'm now pleased to present my report as president. It's ALA Council Document 21, and I assume that you all have read it. It came out earlier, but I'd like to highlight just a few things that we've been working on intensely and making progress on. First of all, the Declaration for the Right to Libraries. I'm very pleased to say that we have state coordinators who are doing a tremendous job of facilitating statewide, local, and regional signings of the Declaration. It's been signed at 26 state conferences at IFLA and has actually gotten traction in other countries. We were contacted by the Finnish Library Association, and they have translated into Finnish, and 2 days ago I got their translation into Swedish. So they are planning to use that. There are states that are having the declaration signed at the State House, with the governor signing the declaration and sponsored by the Secretary of State. And other signings that are happening in a small school library where they have a conversation with their community members. And I just want to emphasize a couple of points. One is that for me, the point of the declaration is not that we gather a whole bunch of signatures and then put it on the shelf. The point is that this is a statement of our values and our impact that I hope lives on and that we can all use for conversations with our communities. What do we value? What is the impact of the library? And what do we want to emphasize in our local community? So that is the focus of the declaration. It will be, the signatures will be presented this spring at the legislative day. So there will be some traction with legislators. We are also in the midst of planning a summit on the future of libraries. This will occur on May 2nd and 3rd in Washington, D.C., happily enough, in partnership with the Library of Congress, so it will take place at the Library of Congress. And we're planning it for, it will be a small group of both librarians and non-librarians to have a conversation about what is the future of libraries, where do we want to plot our course. Not that we will come out with answers, but we'll come out with some really good questions, some strategies for pursuing, things to think about, the trends that we see. And all of that will form a framework for the Center for the Future of Libraries, which ALA is establishing. So the transition, the crossover from the summit to the center should be very robust and should provide an excellent framework for our work in establishing the Center for the Future of Libraries. We also have continuing ALA initiatives, and I know you all read that we received a grant from the Gates Foundation for our community engagement initiatives. And right now, the opportunity is for libraries to apply to get training to facilitate community conversations. And this will be spread out across the country where we'll be selecting teams from all types of libraries. And it's really an invaluable opportunity to empower staff members to reach out to the community, have conversations, and determine how we want to structure our library programs. Certainly, we will be continuing our digital content work. The Digital Content and Libraries Working Group is actually thinking about what are our next steps, what are our next initiatives, and they are having a planning meeting. I don't know what day today is, but one of these days they will be having a planning meeting that I'm going to if I follow my schedule. The idea is thinking about, there's not a dead end. The group has leveraged a lot of accomplishment, a real change in the way publishers certainly perceive libraries and the whole e-content area, but there's a lot left to do. And so that work will continue in some form. I hope you all are aware that we are embarking on a really intense school library advocacy campaign for the next 6 months, particularly developing tools and strategies and op-eds and a number of different strategic initiatives to stem the closing of school libraries, but more importantly, to make sure that we are a collaborative community where all types of libraries and library workers and librarians understand our role of working together to empower all of our children from the youngest age all the way through to adulthood. And school libraries are an essential piece of that. It's a piece that is threatened right now. So we're going to put a special emphasis on shoring up that piece of our ecology. Also on my report, you will see some media activity and travel. I just want to have one comment. I have made a couple of international trips, and I have been overwhelmed at the positive response to the American Library Association and to American librarianship. There are lots of connections we can make. It's an interchange. We have a lot to learn from others, and they are eager to learn from us. So if you are given the opportunity to travel to libraries and meet with librarians in other countries, I hope you will share with us the insights that you gain. This is an area where we're building in ALA, and I think we will all be stronger for it. I just wanted to give you one other item of information. This evening, around 5:30, I will be sending out to the council list and to the division leadership list a letter from me and a very short document about the way that the executive board is moving forward on the idea of reimagining ALA. As you all know, we've been engaged in conversations over the past couple of years. And what we did was we met on Tuesday and Wednesday for two all-day board retreats. We worked together to focus our energies and figure out what are some strategic ways that we need to move forward and move the association forward. We want to be very transparent, so I'm sending the document out to you all tonight, as well as the division leadership. We will have a conversation with division leadership tomorrow morning at breakfast, and then by the beginning of February, we will be sending out to the membership of ALA this document with a feedback mechanism in Connect. So as soon as the conference is over, we're going to set up this feedback mechanism, and it is our intention to gather a lot of feedback, which we will start analyzing in the beginning of March. So we're on our way to change, and it's very positive change based on all of the input and conversation we've gotten so far and on the input that we still will gain. So I just wanted to do a heads up for you that you will receive that. Are there any questions for me on my President's report? All right, hearing no questions, I would like to proceed to the next item of the agenda, which is Council Document 29, and I call upon President-elect Courtney L. Young to present her report. Courtney?
Thank you, Madam President. Good afternoon. I'll just highlight a couple of pieces from my report. Building from something that Barbara just said, working with Barbara Stripling, Maureen Sullivan, we've really made a concerted effort to really bring together our thinking and planning so that we have a sustained and leadership focus for the association, and we carry on initiatives from one president to another. So in that effort of moving ALA forward in our re-envisioning of the association, the one piece that I'll highlight for you from my report has to do with my presidential focus. As you may have noted, my goal is to really sort of build into things that are currently going on in the association. We've had a significant number of presidential initiatives that have had a significant impact on the association and on libraries and on our communities. And we need to continue moving those initiatives forward. So sort of in that framework, I'm going to work and not have sort of a large formal presidential initiative, but work within things that are currently going on in the association. You'll see that there, for example, has been an early opportunity to partner with the Human Resource Development and Recruitment Office, HRDR, to support a project that they were working on related to career coaching, as that really fits into my focus and interest with regards to career development in the association. We'll be building in and looking at things that are focused on diversity, career development, and engagement and outreach as a part of that process. As we move forward with the Declaration to the Rights for Libraries, the Center for the Future of Libraries, and our community conversations and community engagement, I'm going to tap into those things and continue to move them forward and really do the will of the association in moving that work forward. Those are the only pieces of the report I want to highlight. Are there any questions?
Are there any questions for Ms. Young? Thank you very much,
Thank
Courtney.
You.
I would like to say this may be the first glimpse that some of you have of the efficiency and effectiveness of Lois Ann Gregory Wood. She has already copied the letter and memo that I talked about, and we'll pass it out to you. So it's already available. I'll still send it out to you electronically, but she already has it for you. She's wonderful. I will now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 23 and ask Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary of Council, to present his report. Keith?
Thank you, Barbara. I'm going to highlight a couple of things in my report, and I'll just add a couple of sort of late-breaking items that I'll just add right here. First of all, as you may have read in my report, we actually have received an appropriation increase for library programs as a result of the budget that was just signed by the president last week. So that's significant. I think there's a $7 million increase in LSTA. So this is very good news because this is something that is not particularly easy to get at this point. I've not included in my report, but we've also late-breaking news is that the Senate, in fact, has sent out of committee a version of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which includes a requirement for an effective school library media program. Right. And because the House always does exactly what the Senate asked them to do, right, I'm sure that this will just breeze through. We are at least on the field, and I think that that's important. We have a lot of hard work ahead of us, and Barbara talked about the school library campaign. We are going to really need all hands on deck here. On page 5, I talk about the I Love My Librarian Awards that were held in New York in December. It is a wonderful event. We received thousands of notices in media, and it's just a great opportunity to recognize people who are nominated by the public as great librarians. The stories are fabulous. Barbara talked about the Libraries Transforming Communities grant that we received from Gates. Also should note that we're also conducting kitchen table conversations, which is using the same community engagement techniques with our membership. Mary Geekus has coordinated a series of kitchen table conversations at annual, and we're also conducting kitchen table conversations here at Midwinter. Based on the discussions at annual, we have been looking at the member experience because members have told us, not unsurprisingly, that ALA can be bewildering and confusing, and that we need to do anything we can to make it easier for people to get involved, to get engaged, and to benefit from membership. We're going to be distributing copies. We have a new brochure, which is because people talk about the need to communicate the value of ALA membership. It's called Why ALA, and it's the result of a contest we ran in which we have the top reasons to become a member of ALA. So we will have copies available for counselors of that. On page 11, we've been working with under the leadership of Alex and have, in fact, created a digital repository for ALA documents with the University of Illinois, something we've been working on for some time. On page 21, good news in that RDA at this point is significantly ahead of projections. We had a difficult year last year because of the delay in implementation on the part of Library of Congress. And with the approval by LC and the adoption of RDA, we are at this point doing gangbusters. I noted in the report it said that our renewal rate exceeded 100%. I think that's a first. So I was awestruck by that concept. And on page 22, a small item that we'll talk about as part of our APA report, the Oklahoma Department of Libraries has adopted the Library Support Staff Certification Program as meeting the requirements that they have in place for public library, Librarian 3. And this is an important step forward because it is the first instance in what I hope will be 49 other instances of the ALA standards being adopted for as meeting the requirements that are in regulation in the majority of states. This is a great development kind of buried on page 22 there. One other thing. The second Leadership Institute will be held in August. We had a great response to the first Leadership Institute, ably conducted by past president Maureen Sullivan and Catherine Dice from ACRL. So information is available, and we're looking forward to doing another successful Leadership Institute this year. Are there any questions?
All right, if there are no questions, Microphone four, oops. If you'll go right straight back. Microphone four.
Mary Bibelo, counselor at large. I would like to ask Keith a question. It's not pertaining to this report, but this is a question that's passed in, at the annual convention in Chicago. You had sent out a directive that says we would no longer take petition candidates anymore, paper ballot candidates anymore. And for everyone who wanted to run for council would have to run on the internet. When I raised the question, you were rather adamant about the fact that I say some people have a preference for using petition paper to run by council. And in the march, in the American Libraries, November and December issue of 2013, you list the number of candidates who are running, who were nominated by the nominating committee. And in a little squib, a little box there, you say individuals who are interested in running for ALA council by petitions may file an electronic petition or send a paper ballot in, okay, with a qualified membership. Now, which policy are we going to follow? Are we going to follow what you sent out and said you were no longer going to accept paper ballots, or are we going to allow people to pick what they're going to, how they would prefer to run for council?
The notice that you refer to in American Libraries is an error. Let me say that we've received numerous petitions for candidates for council electronically. The process seems to be working well. I know that Lois Ann has assisted some people in preparation of petitions. We've been asked to move to a paperless environment, and that's what we've been trying to do. I would personally be happy to offer assistance to anyone who's seeking to file a petition. It's very easy to file an online petition. It's actually much easier than doing it on paper. We're trying to move into a more efficient and paperless environment.
Okay. And I also note from the nominating committee, since you're trying to get more people to go online to run for council, the nominating committee seems to be taking a shortcut. They're getting people who are running by petition to add to ask them to run by being nominated. That's one part of that. And I've also detected that in the past, it was established way back when Peggy Sullivan was president, never written document, but usually the nominating committees did not nominate those people who were coming off of council, finishing up their council seat. They usually had to run by paper ballot, you know, petition, or else they had to wait, take a year off to run. I'm not trying to name anybody, but if you would, I can point out where the nominating committee has nominated people who have just come off of council to be put on the ballot and selected by the nominating committee. Now, I don't know if that's a procedure you want to continue to follow, because I can know when we had the revision of some of ALA's policies of stating that we wanted new people to run for council, but this is not the way we used to do it, and it's not past precedent.
I can't comment on that. The nominating committee will be reporting, and would certainly be an appropriate discussion item at that point.
The nominating committee will be reporting, yeah. Although the chair of the nominating committee is not able to come at that point, but that would be an appropriate time to ask. I'm sorry. I can't hear. Okay. Microphone 3.
Andrew Pace, Councillor at Large. I'll be giving the report of the nominating committee later in the agenda.
Okay, great. Yeah.
So he will be offering the report. Microphone 3.
Yes, hi. This Karen Schneider, Council at Large. This is not about paper ballots, just to be clear. So is that okay?
Yes, I think we're...
Regarding RDA revenue, sorry to bring that up again. Last year, we had to significantly downsize what our projected revenue would be from RDA. Initially, it was for last fiscal year $780,000, and what we actually got for prior year actual was $158,000 and change. So this year, we are going gangbusters, but only because we've exceeded the budget of $156,000 and change by less than $100,000. So I just want to point out that gangbusters is a little bit of a stretch when we're talking about $80,000.
I don't believe, did I use the term gangbusters?
Was it gangbusters?
I apologize.
Okay.
Let's make it a small g gangbusters. Nonetheless, I would say that it certainly is a preferable trend over the trend last year. So I think it's clear that we're at least moving in the right direction.
Well, if I could comment, what I think I appreciate most is that this is a realistic projection opposed to being five times what it was last year. And we also, just as a comment, I am, like all of us, I think we really need to, the way we're hemorrhaging money for publications really needs to be addressed. The publishing overall is just not doing well.
I would have to say that the expression hemorrhaging money is not, there with gangbusters, in that the fact of the matter is that we are not attaining the net revenue in some instances that we expected to. Last year was a difficult year in publishing. We've tried to take a more conservative approach on all of the revenue lines, and you can see that from the documents that we distributed. And as a result, by adopting a more conservative revenue estimates, we had to adjust expenditures to do that. I think our goal is to get to revenue estimates that we're going to be able to meet. I would have to say that because of the changes involved in bringing Neil Schuman aboard, because of the changes involving in trying to get RDA approved by Library of Congress and actually launched, that last year was a year of more significant uncertainty than has been the case certainly in the past. So we've tried to be more conservative this year, and I do know that, for instance, at the Planning and Budget Assembly and certainly at BARC, we spent a lot of time on publishing, have already, and plan on doing that. I think we want people to be comfortable in terms of the thinking. Anytime you set a budget in an environment where you don't have a track record to base it on, because you're in a new line of business. There is some uncertainty. I think this budget is certainly much, much more realistic than last year's turned out to be. You're absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions? Seeing no one at the microphone, thank you, Keith. At the 1987 midwinter meeting, the ALA Council voted that BARC, the ALA Budget Analysis and Review Committee, should report to Council at each ALA midwinter meeting and annual conference. I refer you to ALA Council document number 33 and call upon Patricia A. Wand, Chair of BARC, to present the report. Pat?
Thank you very much. It is my privilege to have this responsibility to report to you as chair of the Budget Review and Analysis Committee, affectionately called BARC. And I want to begin by assuring you that the American Library Association is a financially healthy organization, and in the scope of the next couple information reports, you'll hear more details about our health and our financial status. And this is the case because of the expert staff and the dedicated volunteers like you who help us to plan our budgets every year and align them with our programmatic priorities. This is a very, very important part of the process and a challenge to all of us. And then we monitor it throughout the year, and we'll be reporting to you about that in the next few minutes. So that we set the context and help you to understand what we're dealing with, our ALA fiscal year runs from September 1 to August 31st every year, and that encompasses most of the revenue and most of the expenses for our two major conferences, which are a very important component of our revenues and expenditures. And at midwinter meetings every year, we are focusing actually on three separate fiscal years. The first one is the fiscal year that has just closed in the previous August, which in this case is fiscal year 2013. And those closing reports take several months to digest and to account. And our treasurer, Mario Gonzalez, will be reporting on the close of the fiscal year 2013 in his report that follows mine. I'll be reporting now on the first quarter and preliminary results of fiscal year 14. And then the third fiscal year that we start addressing in various ways this during midwinter is the fiscal year 2015. And we're beginning now to put together the planning and budget assumptions that we want to have in hand as we project out that far. And as we've already heard from a couple of the questions that came up here in the last few minutes, this is a matter of our best estimates when we start putting our budgets together. So my report today is going to cover this budget update, the fiscal year adjustments that we had to make, some minor adjustments in the fall to address fiscal year 2014 planning. And then we have some preliminary results from the actual living within the budget, the fiscal year 2014. And then I want to tell you about a couple other things that BARC is undertaking to be more effective in our organization. So the first thing we had to do when we got together, BARC meets in the fall and in the spring, as well as during each of the conferences. So when we met in the fall, we had additional information and had to make some adjustments on a couple of what we call the budgetary ceilings in various components of the budget. But this is a good chance also for me to point out to you that we're looking at what I call five pots of money, five areas of expenditures every year. And the biggest of those is the general fund, and you can look at what that means in the ceilings amount here. The second one is divisions. Then there's roundtables, and then grants and awards, and then our long-term investments. And I also want to take this chance to remind you that when we were putting together the fiscal year 2014 budget, we did that in aligning those expenditures with our programmatic priorities. And for our programmatic priorities for 2014 include diversity, literacy, organizational excellence, intellectual freedom, equitable access to information and library services. And I might point out that the document that Barbara Stripling has just handed us addresses this priority, equitable access to information and services. Education and lifelong learning is another priority for us, transforming libraries, and advocacy for libraries in the profession. So let's just briefly look at how we're progressing in our three-month highlights. I want to remind you that 3 months is one quarter of the year, and we anticipate that during these quarters, different things happen, whether we're in conference mode or not in conference mode. For example, one of the things that happens at the beginning of the fiscal year, we often pay upfront for year-long services like auditing services or insurance expenses. So we see that there was expenses over revenues by $877,000. That's typical. We actually had budgeted for $885,000 overage at this early stage in our fiscal year. I also want to point out that both cash and investments were well over the revenue target for the first quarter, as well as the endowment fund. So we're going to go to that first pot of money. Remember the one I said that was the biggest pot of the operating budget. And we can see that we were under revenue and also under expenses during that first 3 months of the year. And this gives you a few more details about how that comes out. One of the things that affect this bottom line are publishing and dues income was affected this as well. Online sales in publishing, online sales, and of course RDA didn't come through as quickly, but it is coming through now. We're seeing the differences in our December incomes as well, although that's not reflected in the slide that you're seeing. I want to point out at this point that the publishing committee is looking at building a strategic plan and has the expectation that it will be reporting to you, to council, during the annual conference in Las Vegas on its plans. Is working closely with the publishing staff and has actually made some significant advances in planning its strategic program. Okay, the division, I want to point out this is the division revenues. We can see here that it was the division revenues are less than budget by $206,000, but the division expenses are also less than what we had anticipated. Again, more details on that. One of the things that affect the division budgets are the three divisions that hold national conferences. Those are AASL, ACRL, and PLA. Each of them holds a national conference every 2 years. And on the non-conference year, they have to budget and plan differently than they do during the conference years. And those affect, because those conferences are significant, they also affect the overall ALA budget planning. Our roundtable revenues were less than budget by $6,000, but the roundtable expenses were down also less. So again, we see this kind of a variation when we look at a budget only one quarter of the way through the year. I wanted to also add that in the earlier slide where we showed a gap of $414,000 between revenue and expenses, that gap over, by the end of December, that gap had decreased to about $38,000 difference. So this is the volatility of looking at trying to look and analyze a budget in a very in the middle of the year. So these are the 3 month highlights for the division. Oh, excuse me, I'm going backwards here. All right. Okay, so let's look for a few minutes at what BARC is trying to do to help our members understand the budgeting process and work within it as they do their planning. Every midwinter on Friday afternoon, we hold a session that is an open session to anyone who wants to come to it, and we urge division and roundtable leaders to do that. It's a session called Finance Best Practices Update. And it's an open forum to just discuss anything around the financial practices that the members may have in mind. The challenge with this has always been that people come with a varied background and knowledge of what the budget process is. And so about 2 years ago, BARC decided to initiate webcasts or short videos explaining the different aspects of planning and budgeting in the association. So we've put five of those webcasts together, and we urge you to consult them. They're short, about 6 to 8 minutes each, and they can give you a lot of information about how to do your budgeting and planning. And these are the topics of the current webcasts that we have in place. Organization structure, budgeting, etc. If you have ideas of other areas that we should address in this manner, please do tell us. Those webcasts are available on the ALA Treasurer's website, and along with some other material that you may find very helpful as you work within the units. I also want to add that BARC has decided to try to compile a handbook of financial practices, and we hope that that will be done within the next year, and it will be available up on the Treasurer's website. BARC also has a system of liaisons. There is a liaison member to every program, division, and roundtable, and if you don't know who your liaison to BARC is, and you work within a division, roundtable, or programmatic program, please consult the Planning and Budget Assembly website, membership has access to that liaison list, as well as does the staff at ALA. So we urge you to be in touch with your liaison. Of course, you can always contact any member of BARC as well. So thank you for your continuing support, all the work you do on behalf of ALA, all the support, both financial and intellectual talent and time that you contribute to the association. And now I'm happy to take questions.
Are there any questions for Ms. Wand? Hearing no questions, thank you very much, yes. Pat. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 13 and call upon ALA Treasurer Mario M. Gonzalez to present his report. Mario?
Thank you, Madam President. It is a pleasure for me to present to you the 2013 audited financial results. Good afternoon, fellow councilors, and a particular good afternoon to fellow councilors who have a star on their badge. These are the councilors that began their term right now. So welcome. In the November issue of American Libraries, I wrote about the budget and how the budget was doing for 2013, and I did not get into numbers during that column. But today I'm here to discuss only numbers with you. We'll work with you to dig down into the meaning of the numbers that allowed us to go through our last fiscal year and the results that got us to where we ended the fiscal year. ALA total revenues were $50,249,085. ALA revenues from operations for the year increased by $612,000 to $50,000,003, roughly. Two areas that counted for most of the gain were grants and awards, publishing-related advertising. Dues and revenues for the year declined by $169,000 and change to $8.4 million. It should be noted that dues category realized a reduction due to member reduction. Total ALA membership fell by 784, and also note that the income from the division's dues increased by $24,000. The sale of books and materials revenue declined by $130,000 to $6.8 million. The subscriptions revenue increased during the year by $161,000 to $4.6 million. The increase for subscription was directly related to the acceptance of digital references, RDA, standards by the Library of Congress, which happened in the spring of 2013. The result was an increase of $285,000. Advertising revenue for the year, and these are items that are within publishing, increased by $556,000 and generating $5.9 million. Revenue increases were realized in all of publishing department areas, but primarily in book lists, ALA editions, and American Libraries. Meeting and conference revenue declined by $914,000 to $11.1 million, primarily as a result of having one less national division conference during the year compared to two in FY12. Products and promotions revenue declined during the year by $203,000 to $1.1 million as a result of lower material sales to libraries struggling to deal with the continuing budget cuts that they're experiencing. Also, ALA store sales at the ALA conference was down by $6,000. Grants and awards increased during the year by $1.17 million. We received grants during the year, which included Dollar General, Everyone Reads at Libraries, Literacy Network databases, and the Carnegie I Love My Librarian, to name a few. Contributions for the year went down slightly from last year, declining by $34,000 to $1.15 million. Dividends and interests for the year declined by $124,000, Interest rates continue to remain low in response to the actions by the Federal Reserve to keep interest rates low, and therefore creating a lower investment balance and lower cash position. Other revenue increased by $331,000, and these increases occurred primarily in royalties. This is a graphic representation of the discussion we just had. Total ALA expenses. The total ALA expenses increased by $372,000 in change to $50.767 million, mainly as a result of increases in the meetings and conferences that was $1.5 million, expenses surrounding ALA national conferences and the general operating fund. Payroll expenses declined during the year by $363,000 as a result of staff reductions, which were part of a management cost-cutting effort, as well as positions that have been left open during the year. Outside services declined during the year by $257,000, primarily in legal fees due to higher fees that had been increased, that had been taking place a year before for the acquisition of Neil Schumann. Equipment and furniture also produced a decline, as well as professional services. Travel expenses declined by $506,000 during the year. Primary areas were entertainment cost reduction resulting from one less national division conference, transportation, lodging, and meals related to the conference. Meeting and conferences expenses increased by $1.5 million. The conference location in Chicago, a high-cost labor city, resulted in higher conference equipment rental and a higher cost for audiovisual expenses. Publications-related expenses were lower during the year, declining by $413,000 to $4.5 million. The declines were mainly in the publishing department, where reductions were realized due to lower order fulfillment, mail service, and the cost of sales. Operating expenses increased by $984,000, although there were changes both positively and negatively to many of these categories. The primary change was a result of higher depreciation expense related to the Neil Schumann acquisition. Post-retirement benefits on a net basis declined by $12,000 as a result of changes in the benefit plan and changing actuarial factors. Here is a comparison chart between the expenses and the revenues for total ALA. As you can see, expenses are exceeding revenue. The consolidated statement of position, the assets versus the liabilities. Our assets increased slightly, $232,000. Total ALA assets for the year declined by $643,000 to $75.4 million. Most of the decrease was traced to the number of category changes in the long-term assets, such as the goodwill and the intangible assets, both related to Neil Schumann. Cash equivalents declined during the year by $862,000. This was primarily due to higher utilization of funds in order to meet day-to-day operations. Also contributing was a deferred revenue primarily in the area of grants and awards that were received. Accounts receivable increased during the year by $426,000 due to higher management info system billings related to the timing of those billings on conference and exhibits, and a slightly higher balance of the distribution forms billings for books and graphics due to additional Neil Schumann activity. Prepaid expenses increased significantly during the year by $224,000. It includes deposit for fourth upcoming division conferences. Long-term investments increased by $1.8 million due to the asset allocation of the portfolio and solid overall performance in the market. You will hear the report from the trustees following my presentation, and you will see that the value of the long-term investment at the end of December was $37.2 million, and Rod Hertzberger will give you details on that. Property equipment declined by $769,000 due to delayed capital purchases during the year. Also contributing were additions to publishing electronic products that were offset by addition of accumulated inventory. Grants receivable declined by $80,000, primarily due to the timing related to the issue, slightly fewer secured grants. Inventory increased by $147,000 as a result of a higher inventory adjustments for activities related to the Neil Schumann Publishing. Goodwill and intangibles. Goodwill is related to the value of the Neil Schumann acquisition, which declined by $500,000 to $1.8 million. The decline was a direct result of a valuation which was performed by request of management by Plant Moran. Intangible assets and net amortization declined by $1 million as a result of the valuation performed by Plant Moran, which received the acquisition of valuation in such areas as distribution relationship and the backlist for Neil Schumann. Total ALA liabilities declined during the year by $876,000, primarily in the area of long-term debt, deferred revenue, and these reductions were slightly offset by gains in the accounts payable and accrued liabilities. Account payable increased during the year by $337,000. This reflects an accrual of payroll related to expenses of higher payables from operations. Accrued liabilities increased during the year by $386,000 due to the organizational incentive that was approved by the executive board at their fall meeting in October 2013. I will mention here, and again later in the report, that the staff received a 2% organizational incentive, a one-time increase in the year 2013, and it was one of three organizational incentives the staff received in the last 4 years. Deferred revenue declined by $621,000, mainly to lower the revenue from grants and awards relating to the timing of those grants and awards and to membership dues based on the decline of the membership. Post-retirement benefits decreased by $47,000. This figure is derived from actuarial tables in conjunction with expected investment returns. The capital lease obligations related to IT hardware and software purchase for the association declined by $81,000. And the long-term debt, the LTD, declined by $647,000 as a direct result of a regularly scheduled annual payment. This is a chart that indicates the net asset balance over 10 years for the association. The general fund summary of revenues versus expense. The operations increased during the year by $1.4 million, mainly as a result of higher revenue from publishing activities in book list and digital reference, as well as annual conference revenue related to the higher registration and advertising. General fund expenses declined marginally, $31,000, as a result of net operating revenue of $76,000, which is $1.5 million more than the reported loss of $1.4 million in fiscal year 12. This was our net operating balance after the 2% organizational incentive that was given to staff. General fund revenues increased during the year by $1.4 million. The most significant increase were in publishing, meetings, and conferences. These gains were offset by dues revenue for the year, which declined by 167,000. Total membership during the year declined from 57,540 members to 56,756 members. This decline is similar to the decline of the previous year. Publishing revenues for the year increased by 863,000. Most of that revenue growth was realized in book lists and a strong advertising and digital reference emphasis. Meetings and conferences revenue for the year decreased by $786,000. Increased by $786,000 as a result of higher registration and advertising and revenue realized from the annual conference in Chicago, which is always a popular site. Products and promotions declined during the year by $203,000 as a result of lower sales of materials and libraries to libraries that have to adjust their budgets. Despite the lower overall results, strong catalog sales were realized. Interest and dividends declined by $52,000, again, based on the Federal Reserve Board's continued policy to promote low interest rates. Contributions during the year were increased during the year by $35,000. The miscellaneous category includes an increase in royalties. And here's a chart indicating that. The total general expenses for the General Fund Activities Association were essentially the same, declining by $31,000. Expenses were reduced in a number of areas as a result of a mid-year cost-saving effort. Change in net assets. At the end of 2012, you see that we had an asset balance of $56,063, which we carry over to the beginning of the 2013 budget. After paying the 2% organizational incentive fee to staff, we had a balance of $76,788. So the total operating net asset balance was $132,851. That's for operations. Below that, for non-operating activities, there was a goodwill impairment of $500,000 and a impairment for intangible assets, both of these related to Neil Schumann, which gave us a total of $880,000 impairment related to Neil Schumann. Taking that from the 132, we had an ending net asset balance of $747,149 in the general fund. The division revenues decreased by $1.8 million from year-to-year comparison, and the division expenses also decreased from year to year by $737,000, giving us a net revenue of a negative $69,000. The decline is directly related to revenue changes in revenue from the PLA conference and the AASL conference, who were coming off conference years in fiscal year 2012. ACRL revenue increased by $2.5 million as a result of a successful conference in Indianapolis. Lastly, I wanted to give you a summary of the roundtables. The roundtables had a net revenue increase of $11,381 or 10.2% on a year-to-year comparison. The last two slides, I will come back to you on Monday to ask you to vote on the programmatic priorities, which are not on this screen, but I have them on my desk. So I will come back to you on Monday about the programmatic priorities, which are what leads the budget process for 2015 and led the budget process for 2014 and 2013.
Questions for Mr. Gonzalez? Microphone 3.
Sue Kam, Councillor at Large. When you give membership figures, are you including the continuing members who pay no dues?
Yes.
And what has the effect been on the association's revenue for implementing the continuing member benefit?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
What's been the effect on the association's revenue on implementing the continuing member benefit?
Would you want to?
I will double check and follow through, but my recollection is that we have about 1,000 members that are 1,200 that are moving over to continuing membership as our baby boomers retire. But I'll double check on that figure.
Thank you.
Seeing no one else at the microphone, thank you, Mario.
Thank you very much.
At the 1985 midwinter meeting, Council voted that the endowment trustees be invited to report to Council at each midwinter meeting and annual conference. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 16 and call upon Rodney Hersberger, Chair of the Endowment Trustees, to present the report. Rod?
Thank you, Barbara. Fun with Numbers Part 3, I think we'll call this. And it'll be a little shorter, hopefully. At the end of 2013, the value of the endowment stood at $37,288,932. This value is an improvement of $14 million, or 61%, from the recessionary depth of $23,421 in 2008. There's no coincidence in that recession and my being treasurer then. So, 2013 was a banner year for equities in the United States and Western Europe. While remaining within the investment guidelines, the trustees have overweighted equities compared to other asset classes. Consequently, ALA's long-term investment returned 16.7% last year, net of all fees. The endowment's performance has been relatively robust since 2008. As you might know, the Fed has kept interest rates low for several years, so fixed income investments have struggled and compare poorly with equities. Corporate bonds did somewhat better than government securities. Hybrids like convertible securities did rather well, and real estate investment trusts performed better than fixed income, but not nearly as well as equities. Even though the equity sector performs spectacularly, it is important for an endowment like ours to maintain a balanced portfolio. Someday interest rates will rise and equities will decline. For those of you who follow markets, you know that major equity indexes returned 25% or more in 2013. Because ALA maintains a balanced portfolio, terrible years like 2008 could have been a lot worse. In that year, equity indexes plunged by a third or more, while the value of our endowment dropped only 24%. We don't yet have benchmark comparisons for 2013 from Nakubo and others, and we won't have those until mid-year. However, if you look at longer terms of 3, 5, and 10 years, ALA's total returns compare favorably with comparable indexes. Let me tell you a little bit about our trustee activities and process. The trustees are all experienced and recognized leaders in their field, but some are relatively new to the trustee role. Prior to our meeting in September in Chicago, our advisors from Merrill Lynch put together a very useful and informative webcast about investing and the roles and responsibilities of being a trustee. Since the webcast had voice interaction for all participants, it allowed for lively interaction. We got together in person a few days later. When we got together in person a few days later, we continued the orientation and learning experience by giving the investment policy a thorough review. Gradually over the years, the trustees have diversified asset classes in which we invest association funds. In the world of wealth management, it is well accepted that investing in a broadly diverse set of asset classes will, over time, result in superior returns with less risk. As association's capital has grown and the knowledge base of the trustees has become more sophisticated, we have broadened the asset classes in which we invest. Part of the ongoing consideration of diversification is looking at active versus passive management. By passive management, we mean investments in electronically traded funds that follow a well-known index like the Standard & Poor's 500 or the Russell 3000. By active management, we mean that managers will select individual stocks within something like those two indexes. While not ignoring the performance of individual managers over defined periods of time, the trustees are now focused more on asset class investments, large cap, small cap, convertibles, REITs, and so forth. Starting last year, the trustees are holding their February meeting in New York. While we have excellent advisors at Merrill Lynch in Chicago, I wanted the trustees to have access to different talent and expertise that is found only in New York. These New York sessions are not sales pitches, but an opportunity to evaluate both macroeconomic conditions as well as different asset classes that might be appropriate for our endowment. Okay, finally, what lies ahead? If consumer spending remains level or improves and corporate earnings are strong, the equity markets may not have topped out yet, although the last few days might change my opinion. Unemployment remains stubbornly high, unfortunately. Many corporations have found ways to increase profits without adding to payroll cost. In Janet Yellen, the Fed has a new chief. Quantitative easing is winding down, but if the Fed keeps interest rates low, there's little reason for fixed income to perform much better in 2014. Developing markets are somewhat uneven, to be kind. They may be into trouble. So it is difficult to predict whether investments in that sector will keep pace with markets in U.S. and Western Europe. In any event, a balanced portfolio, diverse portfolio, will serve ALA well as it has in the past. That's the end of my remarks. I'd like to thank always as Keith Brown for assisting me with this, and to recognize my fellow trustees, Mario Gonzalez, Treasurer of Courts, Kate Nevins, Sheboygan Reardon, and we got stuck with Robert Newland again this reason.
Are there any questions for Mr. Hershberger? Microphone 3.
Yes, Jennifer Bocher Russo, counselor. Actually, this might be better for the treasurer, because I'm just wondering, with all of the good conditions that you've talked about for the endowment, I'm wondering why on slide 13 that interest in dividends in the general fund revenue has decreased by 7%.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe what we've taken out.
I believe, and someone can jump up and correct me, because the those interest income relate to short-term investments, which tend to be tied to bonds and fixed.
So that's more like cash management rather than longer-term stuff. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Microphone 3.
Bob Holly, IFRT counselor. I'm just curious, because you have a statement here, part of this diversification is considering active versus passive management, and then don't say which of the two ALA is currently favoring and why.
Well, ALA has been almost totally in active management, but something I've been talking about for the last few months is that to maybe increase our diversification, we go to passive management with lower fees and see how that does. If managers beat the market, fine, but if they don't, they don't. So it's just another way of diversifying, putting some portion in a passive fund.
Okay.
Passive
Thank
investment.
You for the clarification.
You're welcome.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Hershberger? All right. Thank you very much, Rod. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 26 and call on Andrew K. Pace, member of the Nominating Committee for the 2014 ALA election, to present the committee's report on behalf of Stephen L. Matthews, Chair, who was unable to attend today's meeting. Andrew?
Good morning. Before I give the report, I would like to acknowledge the members of the committee. They are Stephen Matthews, Chair, Nick Buron, Nancy Everhart, John DeSantis, Adrian Lim, Eva Poole, Karen Schneider, and myself. I'd also like to acknowledge and with thanks Joanne Kempf, who served as the committee's staff and liaison. Now, if you'll indulge me a minute, William Shakespeare and Jim Neal often remind me that brevity is the soul of wit, so I will keep my remarks short. I will spare you the particulars of the report since its details are publicly available in the council document and its results are already known, but if you indulge me a few minutes, I would like to point out a few highlights of the committee's experience and editorialize on one of the small difficulties we experienced in fulfilling our charge. First, I'm delighted to report that the committee worked together very efficiently, collegially, and purposefully. Quoting loosely from Helen Keller, happiness is best attained through fidelity to a worthy purpose. And I think I speak for the entire committee when I say that we worked not only with the fidelity that denoted faith in our purpose, but with the kind of stereophonic fidelity that could only be attained by the diverse voices and experiences of the committee members. Second, we completed our work on time without long extensions, protracted negotiations, and even the occasional prisoner's dilemma that sometimes comes with asking multiple candidates to accept nominations for a finite number of seats at the table. Third, we worked together to fulfill our deliverable. Activity should not be mistaken for action, and we've all served on committees where the two are often confused. When the committee completed its work, we concluded with the unanimous conviction that we delivered an excellent slate of presidential and council candidates on behalf of the association. And finally, the editorial content I promised. The committee was a bit disappointed with the paucity of responses we received from divisions, roundtables, and affiliates from whom we solicited names. While ensuring a diverse and representative slate is the de facto deliverable of any responsible nominating committee, the effort is only enhanced by the expansively democratic opportunity extended to divisions, roundtables, and affiliates to help the committee also ensure that the best qualified candidates are put on the slate. We should endeavor, to quote from the report, to strengthen any formal activities or identifiable structural elements currently in place that encourage and or consciously prepare their leaders to see leadership in ALA as the next logical step in their service to the association and librarianship. As the wise and soft-spoken former publisher of American Libraries, Leonard Kniffel, once said to me, they don't call them divisions for nothing. A funny but pointed reminder that we do not always work together as well as we could. In short, it was our committee's task to deliver the best possible slate of candidates we could find, but it is also on all of us to ensure that this association is the best that it can be, and we can only achieve that together. I will conclude these remarks by again thanking Joanne Kempf from ALA, whose solid knowledge and wise counsel were indispensable to the committee, and adding my personal thanks to the committee. In all honesty, the best committee on which I have ever served in any association and with the most skilled chair I have ever worked with. Thank you, Steve Matthews. And finally, thank you to the association, the executive committee, council, the membership, and you, Madam President, for allowing us the time to present our report.
Are there any questions on this portion of the nominating committee's report? The unnumbered microphone.
Oh.
Did you want me to address your? Did you want me to address your earlier question, Mary?
Okay. I'm recognizing.
Oh. Go ahead.
I don't want to debate semantics, but I take offense with you say when you use the terminology of the best qualified people to serve on that committee to be nominated. The best qualified people, because I think people grow, and I don't know what standards you used, and I don't know if there were, if there are any standards required, except that people are willing to serve the organization and to move the program forward. Okay?
Sure.
Again, I raise the question, why did you use the procedure? And I've served on the nominating committee 2 years ago. Why did you go to the petition candidates and nominate them? The best method, and I take this issue with Keith, is to move among our delegates and our people, but with a petition and get to know them and ask them to join us. This method of going by picking people who've served, and I can remember when we had to revise the term limits of ALA because we could not get people to serve. We wanted new people to serve, and we wanted those chairs vacant so they would be, you could get new people to participate in the organization. You're not going to get people to participate in an organization if you don't approach them and encourage them to run. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mary.
I'll just make a quick remark. As I recall, Mary, this was discussed at length at one of the previous council meetings, and so I would direct, I guess, folks at some point to Executive Board Document 10.8, which was the Nominating Committee guidelines that were published in 2012-2013, stating that the nominating committee may select sitting councilors whose terms will be expiring. Everyone, including sitting councilors, were encouraged to put their names forward for nomination. So we considered not only the sitting councilors that put their names forward for nomination, but all of the people who were talked to by the nominating committee, all the publicity that went out for all of those folks, and I will stand by the committee's standard selected slate as not only diverse and inclusive, but also qualified candidates to run for office.
We're running out of time. I would like to caution council that we need to end this session at 4:30. So we're going to move quickly through the rest of the documents. And so, Andrew, would you proceed, please?
Thank you. The presidential candidates slated by the committee for the 2014 AA election are Maggie Farrell, Dean of Libraries, University of Wyoming, Laramie, Wyoming.
She's standing over here.
And Sari Feldman, Executive Director, Cuyahoga County Public Library, Parma, Ohio. I don't have to ask you to stand now. A list of candidates for the position of ALA Counselor at Large is reflected in ALA Council Document Number 26.1.
Are there any questions for Andrew? All right, please proceed.
I think that's it.
Oh, you
yep. Don't. No further questions.
I have to say something. ALA Bylaw Article 3, Section 3B provides that the ALA Nominating Committee shall also include on the official ballot other nominations filed with the executive director by petition of only 25 members of the association at least 4 months before the annual conference, provided written consent of these nominees shall have been filed with the executive director by the association. Petitions, therefore, must be filed by January 31st, 2014. Keith Michael Fields will report on any petitions received for the Office of President-Elect.
To date, I have not received any petitions for the Office of ALA President-Elect.
Have you received any petitions for the Office of ALA Counselor at Large?
To date, petitions with consent have been filed for the Office of ALA Counselor at Large by Mary Biblow, Librarian Emeritus, Stony Brook, New York, Tina S. Chan, Alston, Massachusetts, Matthew P. Cizek, Head Librarian at Penn State Shenango, Lartz Memorial Library in Sharon, Pennsylvania, John C. DeSantis, Cataloging and Metadata Services Librarian at Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire. Christine Lind Haig, Director of the Rochester Hills Public Library in Rochester, Michigan. Dora T. Ho, Young Adult Librarian at the Los Angeles, California Public Library. M. Claire Knowles, Assistant Dean, Simmons College, Boston, Massachusetts. Andrew K. Pace, Executive Director, Networked Library Service, OCLC, Dublin, Ohio, and Brenda Pruitt-Anisette, Assistant Professor, Coordinator of Media Services at Chicago State University in Chicago, Illinois.
Thank you, Keith. Electronic balloting will begin on March 19th, 2014. Polls will close on April 25th, 2014. We will know the results of the election on May 2nd, 2014. I now call upon Keith Michael Fields for announcements. Keith.
Okay. First of all, the registration as of January 24th, which was the end of the day yesterday, the registration advanced was 5,583, which we compared with 5,519 in Seattle and 4,823 in Dallas, 102 on site, and 1,912 exhibit only passes for a grand total of 7,597. We have changed the basis for reporting on these because of the fact that we used to show the exhibit registration separately, we'll bring some comparative statistics for you tomorrow. In addition, we have exhibitor registrations of 3,664 for a grand total of 11,261. Some of you may have noticed that there was a discrepancy in the statistics at the last conference, and the reason being that the exhibits only had not been reflected in the reports. So we're trying to rectify that going forward. I do have couple of other short announcements. As you know, we will be attempting to print fewer paper documents than in the past. They'll be posted as they become available this evening to the council page on the website. Lois Ann will send an email to the council list alerting you when documents have been posted. So please do check your emails coming to each council meeting. If you expressed a need for paper documents, then in fact they will be available at the pickup table. And we will be providing you with document portfolios so that you can store any other documents as you have been able to in the past. And please be aware that although this room is a secure room, other meetings are also being held here. So please do not leave computers or other valuables at your place or inside your portfolio. As the Presidential Candidates Forum will be held in this room immediately following this meeting, we do ask that you please return your document portfolios to their storage boxes at the council documents pickup tables located at the back of the room.
It is now slightly after 4:30, I apologize. The ALA Council Executive Board Membership Information Session stands adjourned. The ALA Presidential Candidates Forum will begin shortly in this room. Thank you.